today. Something a little different. On Fridays, we're going to be asking questions on one theme to a Guardian correspondent or columnist and injecting in some of your thoughts and questions. Today, Zoe Williams on the challenges of social distancing and self-isolation. Like all of us, Zoe Williams is feeling a little dislocated, a little confused. Understanding how to cope with this profound shift in society caused by coronavirus is baffling. The Guardian columnist, who covers politics, food, fitness and more, has been speaking to experts in order to answer questions on how we deal with social distancing and self-isolation. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, learning to cope with a new normal.
My mother's really, really old. I don't think she'd mind me saying that. She's 85 and she's really immunocompromised. And it's really difficult. I can't decide whether to go over. I can't decide whether to go in the door. When I do go over, I just can't decide what to do. So that's what's really changed, is I'm completely frozen and I don't know. I can't make any decisions. Apart from that, my main kind of difference, it's changed things immensely with socialising. I quite easily could have got by without going into the office, because I often didn't anyway. But just like not seeing my friends, not going out to pubs, that's been like a massive change.
Zoe, everyone is quickly trying to understand what they're supposed to be doing. I'm going to come to self-isolation, but first, what is social distancing and how do you do it?
So social distancing, it doesn't have a single definition, because every single decision you make to see fewer people and have contact with fewer people counts as a social distancing manoeuvre, right? So even if you think, I've got to go to work, but I'm not going to get the tube, you are social distancing. Basically, kind of ultimate social distancing is, as Boris Johnson has described, it's don't go into work if you can avoid it. Don't go anywhere apart from the shops or the pharmacist. Don't go to pubs, theatres, bars. Don't go to each other's houses. Don't see other people unless you have to.
We actually did a shout out to listeners to get them to get in touch for this episode. And one guy, Henry Whitworth, tweeted me to say his dad's 82, his mum's 67 with health issues. His auntie is 78. All are refusing to isolate and not taking this very seriously. And he was asking, how can I dissuade them from going to the shops or to public places?
That's the thing is, my mother was really, she was really in a bad way already. So she actually wasn't very mobile even before this happened. What I found, and that's, this is really starting this week. Monday, I started doing some interviews about self-isolation. Friday, I was still seeing my mother quite normally. And my last words to her so far, she's still alive, were, I'll see you on Monday. But then I did some interviews Monday morning and it was extremely dicey, because basically the advice was nobody see any old person if you've got a trace of any kind of illness, a runny nose, itchy eyes, itchy face, nothing that it puts you in any way under the weather. But at the same time, if you are well, you've got to see them, because there are going to be so many people who can't see them. They're going to die of loneliness if you don't make the effort to see them when you can. But since that time, so that was Monday and I had a bit of a headache and I thought, well, I won't go today, but if I go tomorrow, that's no problem. Then on Tuesday, my son had a headache and I thought, well, I'll wait and see if that clears up. And then Wednesday probably was the right day to go. But the kind of weight of the moral imperative is just so unfamiliar, because I thought of myself as like this kind of very robust and also stoical individual who never really got ill. And if they did get ill, they just forged through it. But actually having to think about your own health and its impact on others and keep yourself healthy for the sake of other people, that's probably the biggest change of my life.
I guess for Henry, it's about trying to persuade your relatives of the impact if they don't socially isolate. But it's not easy, is it? I mean, one listener in Rome, Pierre Ramond, sent over an article saying that Italians love to go out to crowded places and not being able to walk carefree in the streets is the most painful thing. But there's another issue here, isn't there, around inequality. You mentioned working from home, but isn't that often easier in middle-class office jobs than many low-income ones or ones that use freelancers or zero-hour contracts?
It's really galling how much this is highlighting social distinctions and assumptions that people make about other people's lives. You know, you cannot, if you're a cleaner, work from home. And if everybody, moreover, from that office starts to work from home, you don't have any cleaning, then you don't have any work and you don't have any money. So it's absolutely terrifying. You know, they're all on 0 hours. You can say deploy every single cleaner to work in a hospital. Fine, if anybody could do that at scale and pace. But there's a huge number of jobs that can't be done from home. And in a way, that puts the onus on those of us who can work from home even more, because for people who have to work on site, it makes their lives more bearable if those of us who don't have to are really, really stringent about it.
Okay, so that's social distancing, but it's all going much further than that. So far, the rules have been that anyone with symptoms living alone isolates for 7 days, or if living with others isolates as a household for 14 days. Then people with certain serious health conditions are being asked to isolate for 12 weeks, but the elderly more broadly and those with other conditions or pregnant women being asked to seriously minimise any contact even with family. But this is changing all the time. We can expect that to be stepped up. The rest of us have already been asked to really, really reduce social contact, and now the schools are closing today. So it's a completely new reality for all of us. I'm going to come to what that means for people who live alone. But just first, if you're in a family, I've had a few listeners ask what to do with the children now at home.
Well, it's very age dependent, this one. Really, this comes under a whole swathe of homeschooling ideas, which if we went down that rabbit hole, we'd never come back out. But just put it this way, there is quite a lot of material, especially if they're school age. You'll be given a lot of material from the school. And there's also material coming out of the BBC on iPlayer and on BBC Sounds, which could do 5 hours of your day. That will entail, though, 5 hours of you working with them, until, at least until they're about 12, because they're not going to do it on their own. So even though there is loads of resource for how to actually do that, it won't be realistic for people who are trying to work from home, unless, you know, you're both working from home and you can take it in turns and you've got the luxury of two parents doing that. I mean, I think I really would make a plea to just all be really easy on ourselves. So if you're one of those families that limits screen time and doesn't like to watch too many Pixar films in a week, just give yourself a break, for God's sake.
Let Peppa Pig roll.
Yeah, yeah. If they end up watching Frozen twice in a day, that's just going to make them better at their dance routines. And I'm really easy on myself. I'm really easy on the kids. And I'm not giving myself a hard time about that. I'm actually quite enjoying it. There's loads of stuff around nature, and I really would recommend, unless you're actively self-isolating, if you're just social distancing and your kids are off school, build in an hour in the open air, whether it's your garden, whether it's your park. Obviously, don't be a jerk about it, but anything you can do to get out of the house and see some trees. You know, it's not just me saying this, there's a huge amount of evidence that it's better for your mental health and better for your physical health. And we do all have to stay mentally and physically strong. This is going to last quite a long time.
And if you're actually isolated, though, are there things you can do in the house with the kids or in the flat?
If you're actually isolated and you don't have a garden, say, then if you've got young kids, I would really recommend kind of making them do dancing and bear crawls and little mini circuits and chase and role play. You know, until your kids are like 7 or 8,
there's loads of stuff you can make them do, even in a relatively small space.
I've got 3 under 7, so I'm taking notes.
Yeah, try and build a little bit of structure, especially if you've got young kids. They say use words like now and next so that they kind of have a sense of time passing and they're not just merging into one chaotic blob of time.
And if you are working from home, how do you do this?
I mean, that is just a lot of TV, I'm afraid. There is no way, unless you've got kids who are really different to mine anyway, there's no way you're going to get a 3 and a 5-year-old doing educative self-play on their own while you concentrate on a piece. I couldn't work with my kids in the room for years until they were about 9 or 10. And I still can't work very well with them in the room. I have to kind of take myself off. Also, once you're not self-isolating, there is room to do a little bit more kind of sharing the load. So if you've got parents of similar age children and you know you're all healthy and nobody's symptomatic, then you can do half a day on, half a day off.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, there's also a lot to be done if grandparents are very isolated and kids are very bored. You combine these two problems by getting your kids to do little plays for the grandparents and put them on Skype, or make cards for them, or do diaries for them. Just try and get them involved in other people's isolation. You'll build up their empathy muscles, if none of their other muscles. That is another huge thing for all of us, especially kind of, you know, high anxiety, high claustrophobia, misery, actually, and a lot of sadness. The more time you spend kind of worrying about people in the rest of your community, the better. It really does take your mind off it and it makes things better for them. So just in my two streets, there's a WhatsApp group, and we actually at the moment have many more people who are offering to help than we do have anybody who needs anything. We got one request and everybody fell on it like a vulture. But
yeah, we've got similar WhatsApps, and the Nextdoor app seems to be being used.
The Nextdoor one, Facebook is on a lot of the COVID-19 sites. There's a lot going on, but really plug yourself into it because there's a huge amount of unmet need, not just among the elderly.
One person who suggested something that I thought was quite good at solving two problems, you know, educating your kids and keeping them quiet. They suggested get your kids to stay silent for an hour and then write about the experience.
Which person ever met a child?
I kind of loved it. I think I've got one of them who might respond to that. Wow. Should you talk to your kids about coronavirus?
Well, this is a real age-appropriate thing. Between kind of 5 and 8, I would really concentrate on reassurance. Try and keep away from the apocalyptic, oh, the world is never going to be the same again stuff, because they don't know what that means. You might actually mean we're never going to be as isolated as we were before, or we're never going to take things for granted the way we did before. But all they're hearing is this is the end of the world. And it's very, very frightening for them. So try and keep that kind of talk either to a minimum or really be clear about what you mean. You know, if you mean, I think society might actually be better afterwards, then say that.
Well, let's come to that point definitely in a minute. But first, just out of interest, my school sent a suggestion about looking at BBC Newsround for regular appropriate updates, and actually said children can sometimes feel more anxious when they think adults are hiding things from them. Stay with us. Next, I want to talk about relationships after claims that self-isolation in China could have caused the divorce rate to spike. Zoe, we need to discuss relationships. It's being suggested that people registering divorces in China think that forcing couples to stay in together all the time may be pushing up the divorce rate.
No way, really? I don't believe that. That just sounds like something that people, I mean, I don't know.
It's got to put pressure on relationships, no?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, I think if you're not both used to working from home, then that is a pressure. I mean, I'm not used to having my husband at home, and it's not that I mind, but I do feel slightly territorial. I think, again, in the way that you have to be kind of inventive with your kids, you have to be inventive with your relationship. So you have to kind of say, I don't know. I mean, I made the dinner last night that I was trying to make look like a restaurant, and I didn't succeed at all. It didn't look like anything you would be fed in a restaurant. But just the kind of effort of, you know, it's just a kind of effort of care. I think probably the rules are the same as they are when you've got a newborn baby, and they are assume goodwill, always err towards forgiveness. Everybody's going to be ratty. And walk out of the room and count to 10 before you start a row. Those were the baby rules, right? Is that right?
And what about if you live with flatmates?
If you live with flatmates, I think, you know, obviously you're all going to have really different pressures. So some of you will be able to self-isolate. Some of you are going to be terrified about work. Some of you are going to be terrified about paying the rent. There's going to be a group pressure to pay the rent. So there's going to be, if anything, I would think more stress. You know, it's tempting often to think people with children are going through the worst. But actually, I think probably it's the people in that earlier stage of life who are going to face this period most starkly. We've just got to be really kind to each other. And, you know, there's a kind of new movement where you just choose somebody to have Skype dinner with that night and you just get a bottle of wine and sit in front of Skype and pretend you're at dinner.
I've suggested a FaceTime drink with someone tomorrow night.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's not a bad idea. The only proviso I would say to that is that alcohol does diminish your immune system.
Oh, I did read that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, just on that, before I want to move on to one other thing. You've talked about food and trying to make it feel like it was a restaurant at home, but I'm also fascinated by what's going on in supermarkets where people can't get delivery slots, the shelves are empty, Sainsbury's are now doing special hours for older shoppers. It's harder to get hold of stuff. I mean, is there any tips that you could give people on what to cook with a depleted fridge?
Again, I think we should just be really kind to each other on this because everybody's being furiously judgmental and kind of stockpiling. But actually, that's just, you know, our supermarkets were planned for the demand that we were putting on them. And if everybody's having to buy in the stuff they need for 2 weeks without anybody being able to go out, of course, the supermarket's going to be empty. You know, that's just an absolute given. What I would say is, if you're going to avoid supermarkets, then corner shops are often amazingly well stocked. You probably haven't looked at their groceries for a long time because you're just not used to buying from corner shops. But they have beans, black-eyed beans, chickpeas, all of that stuff they've got going on. It's really delicious. Chinese supermarkets are great. I've got loads and loads of dumplings and they've filled the freezer and they're delicious. They're really cheap. Noodles. I can't see anybody running out of vegetables. You know, whenever you see these empty supermarkets, they've always got vegetables left. So really don't fret about nutrition. Just get things that are going to be tasty and cheering. And I repeat that as well for old people. They need things that are going to be tasty and cheering because when morale is low and you're quite isolated and you're getting older, your kind of hunger and your thirst mechanisms sort of drop off. And it's not that you're trying to starve yourself, you just don't feel like it. So they need really tantalizing, delicious things.
Obviously, it's a very different situation if you're living on your own, and particularly if you're living on your own and you're within a group that is being advised to essentially isolate. What are the challenges for people in that situation?
If you're self-isolating, you can't go out at all. And in this case, you really do need to call on your neighbours and friends. People don't mind, honestly. Go on the Facebook groups. They're all called COVID-19 Mutual. Stick a note on your door and say, I need some supplies and I'm on my own. And somebody will pick it up, I promise you. There's lots of people leafleting. I'm doing some leafleting in my road later. But, you know, if you get a leaflet through the door saying, I'm happy to do stuff, then to keep it and use it. Just make use of everything people are offering because people want to help. It's almost easier to self-isolate because you think you're doing it for altruistic reasons, which you are. You're trying to protect other people. But if you're well and you're just having to stay alone for your own health, there's a part of you that thinks, well, I'd honestly rather just take what life throws at me and actually see another human face. And I think if you're feeling like that, you just need to, in the first place, use everything that technology can throw at you, whether that's Skype or just an old-fashioned phone call or a Facebook page. Do what you can to make contact without actually having physical contact and see how you feel. I really feel for everybody in that situation. And I would never say don't be an idiot because there's nothing idiotic about any response in that place.
Yeah, one person messaged me who lives on their own and has a health condition and really, really wants to go over and see someone tonight and is worried about the loneliness, but also about their health. And I just think it's a very, very difficult position to be in. But loneliness is also a really terrible thing to suffer. Look, finally, this is a profound change for all of us, as you've been setting out. I suppose one question is whether there are any silver linings, any thoughts about the positives that could come out of this? I mean, it's heartwarming to talk about, as you've said, the amazing ways that communities have responded to this. it's probably nice to spend more time with people locally, or if you're in situations like ours, a lot more time with your children. Could this reshape the way we interact with each other?
I think it's even bigger than that, actually. I think it will reshape our notion of our responsibilities to each other, both kind of really intimate family responsibilities, but also, you know, responsibilities to your neighbours and your friends. And in the very first instance, even before we talk about kind of rebuilding social connections in a practical way, it just reminds you how much you love them all, you know. And so I think that will be a change. I think I've got to be honest, I don't want to make this into a political point, but if you look at what the First and Second World Wars did to our notion of society and what it meant, we did the most radical good in history after those wars, because we all sustained losses, we all sustained anxiety and pain, and we kind of remembered what mattered. And it was out of that spirit that we built the NHS and the largest programme of social housing we ever conceived. So I think there is something about a reset in this. There is something just about kind of remembering what matters, remembering what doesn't matter, that makes social ambition hugely possible, especially if it's underpinned by emergency measures. You know, if we do guarantee everybody's rent for 3 months, if we do guarantee everybody's wages, whether they're sick or not, if we do make sure that people on benefits aren't constantly surveilled and penalised, if we do make sure that old people are cared for and looked after, we will kind of rediscover why that was important and why it felt good. So, you know, I have really high hopes for what happens when we come out of this. I suppose my only real pessimism is how long that will be.
Zoe, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Zoe Williams, who has written all about this. Do look it up on the website. I'm sure we could all do with sharing some tips right now. Do also read the extensive coverage that we've got online on this coronavirus crisis. We did have one question from a listener that wasn't right for Zoe, but our producer Courtney has looked into it. Frederica tweeted to say, two NHS doctors here stuck in quarantine in Peru. What is the UK policy in terms of repatriating citizens? Frederica, we went to the Foreign and Commonwealth Office and they gave us a statement from the UK ambassador in Peru, Kate Harrison, who said they were working closely with authorities, commercial airlines and other diplomatic missions to help people in Peru to get home. They said Peru is processing diplomatic requests to enable flights to be exempted from the curfew, and one is leaving Lima on Friday evening. Her advice is to secure safe accommodation and follow the Peruvian rules, but she did say the consular team is working around the clock. Before I go, I want to mention a story that would usually be all over the front pages, but these are strange times. A report on the Windrush scandal has described the Home Office as reckless and defensive, as well as institutionally ignorant about race and too slow to react as the scandal unfolded. It was our colleague Amelia Gentleman who revealed the deportations of people who had lived their whole lives in the UK, and she has written about this, so do read her story at theguardian.com. I promise you that Today in Focus will not be forgetting this, and we will do a full detailed episode on the findings when this current crisis subsides. That's it for today. My thanks to Zoe Williams and good luck to everyone who is adjusting to whatever rules they need to follow. This episode was produced by Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Cucutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. I hope you are able to relax this weekend. See you on Monday, where we'll have a little bit of news, not about coronavirus.